everyone. Welcome to the Booze and Boobs podcast. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Katrina. Thanks for joining us today as we talk about some of our favorite horror movies.
We created this podcast as a way to give women more of a voice in horror. Men dominate most industries, especially film and television.
And that also goes for podcasts. We'll focus on female characters, motivations, or just expectations placed on women in horror, even if the situation is happening to a man.
We're excited you're here, and we hope you love it.
Now let's get to today's movie.
Welcome back to the February edition of Katrina Wishes She Wasn't My Friend Anymore.
I'm so tired. I just want to nap, but it's okay. I can nap after this.
You're doing a really good job. We are covering The Witch for this month. It took us 10 minutes on a podcast to figure out what we were going to do last month for this month. So I think this is going to be a good one. We're going to summarize the movie really quickly, and then we're going to focus on some of the conversation topics that we've come up with, and then just pull examples from the movie versus going scene by scene. I think that would be more boring when you're talking about this specific movie.
In my opinion, yes, because I found this movie intriguing but boring at the same time. So
I could see that from a different perspective for sure. When we've talked about it a little bit before, I have a lot of religious trauma, and this movie, when I saw it in theaters, this is The Witch. It came out in 2016. It was Robert Eggers' first movie, and he is kind of his own like horror. I don't know. What is he? He's good. He's good at horror, guys. I can't talk. It's Friday, literally like minutes after like hell week at work. Like, I don't know. I'm here, but I'm happy to talk about this movie with you.
The reason I like this movie is because it scares Rachel and I find it funny. So,
oh yeah. Like,
I'm willing to talk about it.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, when I saw this movie, like it stuck with me, terrifies me. And watching it again, we usually watch movies twice for the podcast, even if we've seen it several times. Like, I was not upset watching When a Stranger Calls 50 times before we did that episode. But with this one, I tried watching it by myself for my first watch, and I'll admit I was a little bit under the influence, but I literally had to turn it off at the most technically boring part because I was like, I was freaking out. And then when Marissa and I watched it again, I'm just watching it on the phone with her, and I'm like, it just gets me. It knows exactly what terrifies me, and that is the devil trying to do stuff with me. I don't like that. He can't have my soul. It's mine. And Jesus's. But he can't have mine. So, and here's the thing about that. Rachel's rant number one is, am I actually scared of the devil? No, because I am a Christian and I believe in Christ, and I believe that God beats the devil every single time. So, like, I really feel that if the ex-angel Lucifer was in front of me trying to do something, I'd be like, get out of here, loser. But this one, he scares me just a little bit. So,
yeah, and I think that's kind of where my perspective is a little bit different, because like I am just kind of like blah, blah, blah about a lot of things. For me, like, I used to be really into the whole like go to church Christianity type thing, but as I grew older, I was like, it doesn't stick with me. I never really felt that connection or that fear either. Like, it never made me feel anything. So I think that's why when I watch this, I don't really feel a whole lot, because I'm just like, yep, that sucks. Like, oh, that's a bad goat. Like,
the way it was actually the goat the whole time, I was like, it can't be the goat. Like, that's too much. And then it was the goat. So I got
it was the goat. Got by the goat.
And it was the devil being a goat. I was like, are you for real right now?
A
But
literal black goat.
yeah.
Come on now.
This, I can see, I absolutely could see somebody, and like any old person watching this movie and thinking it's like an absolute farce. But I think that it is a brilliant piece of art that was so masterfully done that it's 2024, and I literally can't watch this movie by myself. It is so frightening to me. And it's very, I think you used the word dull, and it is dull in the sense that it's not sharp and like edgy, but it's very intense. Like I watch this movie and I'm like the whole time.
Yeah, I did feel like it did make me feel emotions like throughout the movie. Like I felt things, like I felt like grossed out and then like nervous and like angry about a couple different things. But that's why I was like, I didn't feel fear watching it, but I did feel other things watching it. So that's why I was like, it's not a terrible movie. I think it's a good movie. Like it's a good timepiece. And I think that they did a good job. Like honestly, watching it the second time was easier because the first time it took me a minute to get adjusted to the language, the old English. And I was like, ugh, come on now.
Subtitles help tremendously, and a lot of the dialogue is
Absolutely.
very quiet, which is kind of frustrating too. But I
The
guess it's
father's voice was the thing that I remember, like, because the opening is with his voice, and I'm like, that's a gravelly voice if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, so I mean, we can keep talking about it. Let's get into it. So we are discussing The Witch, the Vitch, as I like to call it, and that's how I also type it all the time with two V's. From 2016, directed by Robert Eggers. Notable actors include our darling Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Ineson, who I'm gonna say is Katrina's boyfriend for this movie, and Kate Dickie, who plays the mom. And our notable characters are Thomason, who's the eldest daughter, Anya Taylor-Joy, William, who's Ralph Ineson, the dad, Catherine, who is played by Kate Dickie, and then our surprise star of this movie is Satan. So,
Satan himself.
literally, like when I watch this movie, I'm like, that is like the devil. Like he got a day rate and he came in and did it. He, I know you're laughing, but like that's like the real devil to me. So,
So,
go ahead.
quick question before we get into this. How do you
Quick
feel
question
about
before it's been 15 minutes already.
goats in your day-to-day life?
I like them. I think that they're cute. They're fun at petting zoos and stuff. They stink a little bit, but that's just
Yeah.
being a farm animal. I don't have like a problem with goats. I don't
It's
like
just
Black
Black
Phillip because
Phillip.
he's the
Okay.
devil.
So if I had goats, you would be fine coming over then. Okay. As long as I don't name any of them Philip or
Actually,
Black
I think you
Phillip.
should.
I considered it. I was like,
I think
oh,
it's
that would be
very
a good
funny.
name for a goat. Mercy, Jonas, and Black
Oh my God. Okay, well, those two. Blech.
Phillip. Oh, God, I hated them. We'll get into the child hating later, but
Well, why wait?
yeah, truly.
So, a very, 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 very quick summary of this movie. It opens up, we see the family on trial, so to speak, by pilgrims, or as Katrina likes to call them, colonizers. Both are accurate. And William, the father, has been accused of the sin of pride, and the family is basically just kicked out of their little village. So the rest of the movie, they are struggling in a homestead with bad crops. Their animals aren't well, and a lot of bad things happen to the family. And then by the end, the only one left is Thomason, who signs the devil's book. And I didn't love that. I was all for her until that very moment. I'm like, oh no, don't do that. So that was the quickest summary we've ever done, and everything I said is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, that covers it.
Do you have anything just off the top that you want to address? Obviously, if you have not seen the movie, we're not going scene by scene. Go watch the movie and then come back, because I really would rather talk about our topics than beat by beat.
So do that, but definitely come back,
Yeah,
please.
please.
Or let us spoil it, and then you can watch it with the knowledge from this episode.
Yeah, maybe you won't be so scared when you just think about me crying all the time.
Okay, I think the first topic we should bring up, because this is the Booze and Boobs podcast and it's about women for women by
By
women,
women.
we should talk about women and the societal implications and the psychological implications of like the mother-daughter relationship that they have. And even like the pilgrim version of women versus the witch version of women, of how like the pilgrim women were basically under true, like,
Patriarchy.
so yes, under a true patriarchy, whereas the women, the witch culture is more under a matriarchy, and how they
Also
just
under the
pity
devil,
you.
but
Right, but in a general sense, it that's, I mean, that's also part of the patriarchy, is if you're a witch, you're with the devil. You know, if you're into nature and you're into this, or you're just a little bit weird, the devil has bewitched you, or you are a witch. Whereas people are just weird and kooky.
well, I
You know what I
would like
mean?
to point out specifically in this movie, they were witches.
Yes, in this movie they were, but when the witch trials were happening, they were not.
Yeah,
Ugh,
so this
peer pressure.
movie, it does say it in the like end credits. With like the title card and everything, it says The Witch, like a new American folktale or something like that. But the movie was put together from a lot of folklore from the time. So it's set in 1630. A lot of the dialogue was taken directly from old journals and things like that, like verbatim. And then a story was weaved between everything. So that's kind of what Katrina was talking about earlier, like the old English. Like it's a little difficult, especially if you're trying to have a casual watch. These female, I mean, I hate to call them stereotypes because it doesn't seem that way. I'm a woman and I have a woman brain and I understand how complex I am as a creature. So as I've been reading a lot and watching a lot of movies, I understand not everyone is the main character, but it's so interesting to read about and see other people, not always just women, but a lot of times just women, when they're like, yeah, like I just do what I'm told, or I just live up to these expectations and I don't deviate. And I'm like, but you're like a whole person with thoughts and feelings of your own. Like, why doesn't everyone want to express all that? It's like I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I think it's rooted in fear, you know, of being rejected or not understood or just being like outcast, basically. Because I mean, that whole family was banished. But even in today, you know, it's hard to fit in. And I think that's what a lot of women want to do, is just fly under the radar and fit in because it's easier. And that's how it's always been. It's easier when you're not noticed and you don't make a splash somewhere.
Just so
And you have to
interesting.
be really, you have to be really confident in like who you are as a person to take that step. And I think that's what a lot of people lack, is that confidence in who they are themselves. I mean, most people don't figure it out until they're, I mean, why do you think all these women later in their lives are getting divorced from their husbands after 20 plus years? Because finally they're tired and they're like, I want to be my own person, and this marriage is not conducive to who I am as a person anymore. You grow apart, you grow up, but you also grow out sometimes from your people. So it's harder to leave sometimes than it is to stay and just do what you know.
And that's really heartbreaking for me. And, and I mean, maybe for you, you and I both are very strong personalities. I am fully aware that I am a person who is out there and I say things and I do things that are not quote unquote typical. But I think that that's so odd to put myself in a category of other, because I'm just doing sometimes like whatever I want or whatever needs to get done kind of a thing. And it's so, I have this disconnect where I'm just like, why wouldn't somebody just do what they want and like live their life? As like, I feel like that should be so baseline, especially as a woman. I mean, I'm speaking of my life in this day and age, but I'm like, to look at like this mom in this movie who was so rigid, and I'm just like, your children are dying, your house is a mess, you were banished from your home because of your husband. And I understand that obviously laws and things like that were different, but I'm like, but you're not even trying a little bit?
Yeah. Well, and something I found interesting, so they came from England not that long ago, because Thomasin still remembers it and expects Caleb to remember bits and pieces of England as well. And they seemed okay. They seemed like somewhat well off over there. They had stained glass windows. They had time for leisurely things. But they came to the Americas for whatever reason. I'm guessing religious
freedom. They say that in the beginning.
Yeah, so they came here for religious freedom, basically, and are now suffering. But it's, you know, that wife was used to, like, Catherine was so used to her standard of living over there, and then coming here and just being banished, being poor, being starving, everything is failing. And then later on in the movie, Thomasin mentions how, not Thomasin, but Catherine mentions how she's become like Job's wife by like undermining her husband and being like, you're not doing this right. Like being, she even like called herself a shrew towards him. And she's like, I know this is not how I'm supposed to be as a wife. But I'm like, but you have no choice. Your baby is missing. Everybody is starving to death. Like, you're not okay. And your husband is not doing enough. Yeah. And everybody seems to blame themselves. Like, even towards the end, like, the husband was like, this is my fault. I brought this, you know.
I don't think that he blamed himself. I think he finally took responsibility.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I did this to my family. Well,
kinda. Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, the devil is also involved, but
he got them kicked out, you know. And we don't know what happened in the village that was so extreme enough for him to get kicked out of a place that was supposed to be there for religious freedom. Granted, it's really not religious freedom, because it's just like so people can be Christians. So like you couldn't do whatever religion you wanted.
Well, here we are. So I think, and this kind of plays into this movie, you know, I mean, obviously I'm a big supporter of context clues and things like that. So we're in the 1630s, we're in a rigid puritanical society. So a lot of things link up. However, this tale is also super allegorical, and it's a very interesting thing about how so many things relate to what we're all going through now, but are put in the context of a story that is so specific.
I think this movie really shows the complex relationship between a mother and a daughter, especially like the eldest daughter and a mother, because I feel like a lot of eldest daughters are like put in a third parent kind of position if they're a little bit older than their siblings. So there's a lot of like strife, like contention between, well, I'm supposed to take care of my siblings, but I can't parent them because then I get in trouble if I parent them, but then I get in trouble if I don't control them at all and don't do my job. It makes the daughter angry towards the parents. Like, this is not my job. These are not my kids. I didn't have this baby And it's one of those things that I think where a lot of bigger families just expect, like, as my kids get older, they'll take care of my other kids and it gets easier. No, just stop having kids.
I think that's really interesting too. So we do see in the first scene of the movie, there's the lineup of the whole family, and Kate at the time is pregnant. Or Catherine, she goes by Kate sometimes, and her name, her real name is Kate, so that's fine. It's not another Sharon Rose situation. I'm talking about the same person this time. So we see Kate's pregnant, so that baby was coming anyway, but it's especially more volatile once the family's banished and there's a baby. Mm-hmm. So there's William and Kate are the parents. Thomason's the oldest daughter. Caleb is the eldest son. And then we've got Jonas and Mercy. They're the twins. Max seven?
Six, seven. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're annoying as fuck.
We hate them.
I don't know which of them is older, but they're the twins. And then there's baby Samuel. I understand, especially back then, people had bigger families because they had towns and villages that they needed to upkeep. They needed more bodies. But I mean, it's absolutely straight on resources. It's not like A Quiet Place, them having a kid. That made no damn sense.
Yeah, absolutely not.
That made no sense. You had already been in this situation for a year and then you had another kid. No, you do not get my sympathy. Mm-hmm. But
it's a choice.
Yeah, so I completely agree. Neither Katrina nor I are eldest daughter. Well, I guess I am an eldest daughter, but I'm the baby. So I'm very complex, but I never had to take care of anybody. Yeah. And I am a full-time job already. So I'll just relate.
Take care of yourself is your job.
Yeah. I need a raise too.
Cause like you can ask any older sibling, I think, and they'll say like the parents are the most strict with the eldest children. And then the more children they have, the more they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also frustrating to see, is because I'm sure they were hard on Thomason, but then these kids are just running around singing about a goat and Black Phillip this and Black Phillip that, and like, nope, they don't listen to anybody, they don't do anything productive whatsoever. And so it's got to be infuriating that she's trying to do her chores and watch these freaking kids who don't listen. And so honestly, if Thomason did give up that baby, like if she did somehow offer it up to the witch, can't say you blame her. She's tired of taking care of kids that are hers.
Yeah, so the scene that Katrina is referring to, it's very early once we see that the family has been established in their new little homestead. It's kind of like a cottage just off of a big forest. So the mom gives the baby over to Thomason to watch. I don't know why Kate couldn't, but that's also the point. And Thomason just takes the baby out to the little field outside their house, and they're playing peekaboo, and the camera's on Thomason opening and closing her eyes, playing peekaboo. And then the last time she does it and uncovers her face, the baby's gone. We see right after that a shot of the woods. There's a little branch that kind of rustles. And then we cut to a far off scene of somebody running through the woods, presumably carrying the baby. We find out that is, I would say, a witch. I don't know if I would say it's the witch. Maybe it is, because eventually we see several of them. So maybe it is. I don't know. It's an allegory.
She seems to be a recurring witch for this movie, at least.
We'll put that in there. And the witch kills the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And takes basically a mortar and pestle and smushes it all up. And then rubs the remnants all over.
Contents.
Yeah, all of it. All over her body and her broom. So what I presume is the next time we see her, she is a lot younger and now she can fly on her broom. So, and this plays into witch tales that they feed and use the souls and bodies of innocents to maintain their youth and power. So that all makes sense. It's fucking gross. You don't see it, but you do see it, and
you hear enough.
Yeah, that's probably the worst, but it's very well done. So good job.
Yeah. And I like that they didn't hold back on like the nudity, and it was a woman who didn't have a perfect body. Like it was an older woman. So I was like, oh, good for them.
Yeah, I think it's, I can't believe I'm talking about this in relation to a witch, you know, smushing a baby, but it's tasteful. It's well done and artistic.
I understand what you said. Yes, I would agree. It they could have been gross and gory and over the top with it, but they really weren't. But they did make you feel unsettled and sad because I'm like, oh, it's a baby. Like, I'm usually a baby hater, but I'm like, that was a cute baby.
I was a
And
baby.
what was a baby? And I think it's interesting how you said innocent, because the family views it as the opposite, because when you're they view that when you're born, you are born with the original sin.
I like what you were saying about being born with the original sin, because that is definitely a topic they discuss in the movie, and that's interesting in comparison to the witch.
Yeah, and I think it's something that it depends on your religion, what you believe. Some people believe that you can't commit sin until you are knowing what you do is wrong, like till you're like conscientious of the that what you do can do harm. Whereas other people, they baptize babies because you're already full of sin, and it's probably, just a good just in case. Sprinkle, sprinkle. The family was unable to baptize Samuel because they were banished from the village, and they said that the church does not really deal with people outside of their church. So, I mean, you could do an at-home baptism, I guess, but maybe they were like, that's just me being wishful, I guess.
Well, and that's the thing that's interesting about a puritanical society, and also, like, you know, the thing even that I, you know, quote unquote struggle with, it's, you know, I have no problem saying I'm a Christian, I believe in Jesus Christ and the death on the cross and rising again. Absolutely, like, that is my belief system. But what I have an issue with, and one reason why I've pulled away from a religious lifestyle, is I think that there is so much wrong with the church and what people are doing that I don't want to associate with that. That has no bearing on what my faith is. And the Jesus I know hung out with whores and thieves and sinners. And there was no condemnation in that. It was always a relationship, and puritanical society. And when I say that in now, I'm referring to the Supreme Court. They are so self-righteous and like the Pharisees that Jesus overturned their tables because they were doing the wrong thing and leading people astray. And I think that it's not like that is ever going to go away because sin is prevalent, and the people who think that they're doing the right thing sometimes are not because their beliefs have been clouded. But it's so interesting to say where the puritanical village kicks these people out and at that point would damn, by their belief, their children, you know, blaming the children for the sins of the father. Because
Yeah, if
that's not how this actually would work if you were going
if
by the
anything,
Bible.
it's well, and I think it's one of those things where the thing that makes it hard for me personally is I know that the Bible was written by man and was interpreted by mankind as well. And so it's going to be flawed because man as a whole is flawed. I think that these people who take every single letter literally don't understand that there's con like it's about context clues. It's about doing the right thing and what is the right thing. You shouldn't have to be told it's wrong to murder people. But it's one of those things where it's like, if you don't write it down, people are going to be like, well, I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to kill my brother. What do you mean? So.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that fact. And that's just one of these things where I think when you're discussing, especially a puritanical society, I feel like it's low-hanging fruit to attack Christianity and religion as a whole. Because I would not associate with a puritanical society. That's
No.
not what Jesus was doing. Jesus wants you to be as Christ-like as possible and as good, but I mean, pretty much the only unforgivable sin is blasphemy, and William wasn't banished for blasphemy. Now, there are the seven deadly sins, and pride is one of them that he was banished for, but only God can judge, which is a direct quote. It's not the loving, open relationship. Like, they're living like the Old Testament, and, anything post the New Testament is a New Testament God where you can have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You don't have to have an intercession with your pastor, priest, rabbi, anything like that, like to get to God. So this like overtly, I mean, and I'm saying it's puritanical as a description, even though it is the actual Puritans, but this rigid, inflexible, in my opinion, awful society, them taking up the mantle of being like, well, I will decide your spiritual fate and damn your children for you. That's not how this works. So I feel like that's an important thing to discuss for me, is even on a platform like this, where like, yeah, we're talking about the movie, but it's the same thing when people are talking about like, oh, how would the cars work in Fast and the Furious, or like police procedurals, like, oh, my dad was a cop for a million years, and he'd be like, oh, SVU, like, that's not how we do it, blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing if you're talking about a movie about religion. This is not how it should work.
And I think that's what, or, is it that the father was so prideful that he couldn't face going back to the village and asking them to baptize his baby again?
I mean, a
And he
million
just said
percent.
that they wouldn't.
Yeah, I
It, we
agree with
don't
that too.
know. So, because I mean, the Kate, the mother, seemed to believe that they would because she said that she was begging him for weeks and months, take him in, get him baptized, get him baptized. So for some reason, she believed that they would. It's, I think, William's pride that kept him from doing it.
In this context, I believe that a million percent because it is nuanced. It's likely that this shitty society would be like, nah, fuck you. But it is also true that Williamson, that, and Katrina made this chart with like the seven deadly sins and like which one would likely correlate with the family members. And I mean, they specifically say William has committed the sin of pride in the movie, but all of your other ones are really good too. I honestly could talk about this one topic alone for a 3-hour podcast, so I probably need to move on. So feel free to reel me in.
Okay. We'll wrap it up and we'll go to our next topic. But I think it's good to talk about though. It's one of those things where it's like they really didn't have much choice in their living situation. They were banished from their village. Personally, I wouldn't want to go back to the village and be like, "Hey, can you do a prayer and throw some water on my baby so he doesn't go to hell?" I wouldn't want to do that either. So, I mean, I get William's perspective on that a little bit because he's like, oh, it's a day's ride on a horse. They're already starving. Like, they can't really waste resources at all either. And nobody assumes that their baby's going to be stolen by a witch.
Or a wolf. So one of the things that strings along the plot of this movie, so we know immediately the baby was taken. It's a conversation where the family doesn't know that there's an actual witch, spiritual force, fucking Satan in their midst. And it's also, in the 1600s and they live by a forest, they're like, a wolf got the baby. And they
And they're
blame
also,
Thomason. for that. But a wolf also wouldn't, I mean, like we've all seen the Lion King and his little pouncing, but like a wolf would not do that. So it's also a little of a delusion, but that's better than the
Yeah, they're like,
alternative.
well, that's fair. But it's also like a wolf would have left blood, a wolf would have probably attacked Thomasin. She could have been able to fight. There's a lot of things, but they chose to believe it was a wolf. And you can tell that they are, from the beginning of this movie, the woods are creepy otherness to them. And that's something that I think they're so fearful of, the woods and the forest. And it's like, what have they experienced to be that fearful of the woods and the forest? Or is that just like maybe they had a superstition, maybe they just heard rumors, things like that? I don't know, but they never really talked about the back part of why they don't like their kids going in the woods. They don't like this. And that part confused me. I'm like, why are the woods so scary to them?
So
So
it's, I mean, it's the first minute and a half that the family gets exiled and leaves the town, and Kate is pregnant. And then the next time we see the family, they're already at this cottage, tilling their corn, and they already have a barn with animals, and the baby's born and is several months old. I don't know exactly how old, but it's not like a teeny tiny little infant. I wouldn't say he's a year old.
No, he wasn't close to walking.
Oh yeah, no
And
way.
I found it like interesting how they just came across like a clearing in the woods and were like, this is ours now. But
Yeah,
plus,
there's no mention of how they got to this specific place, like if they knew someone who knew someone, or if they happened upon it, did they build it themselves? I mean, I highly doubt that, but they're there,
feel like they
and
just
that's
took it
kind of
over, but it
our
is what it
thing.
is. Yeah.
There's So I mean, yeah, like we mentioned, like they're tilling their corn. It's a plot thing that like they're very poor, the lifestyle that they had grown accustomed to, it's gone. Their crops aren't doing well, their animals aren't reproducing, the animals are getting sick. So like there is physical evidence of bad things happening within the family, and so much of the talk is trying to have faith through it, even though they feel like they have been cursed on this land, but they don't link it to the actual.
Sin.
And that's one of the things about this movie. It's like we know right away that there is something. They don't know that there really is something, but there is also the conversation in religion where, everything that happens, well, I mean, in my religion, I'm guilty all the time. Like, I'm not Catholic. I don't have confirmation. Like, I'm like terrified of going to hell. Don't want that to happen. And in this movie, all of that is expounded upon. So they take everything as a curse or a lesson, and it's just something that they have to get through. Like, you made a really good note that Caleb, the eldest son, when he goes out hunting in the woods with William, he's like spiraling because he doesn't know or understand if, after Samuel's taken and presumably killed, if the baby is in heaven or not.
And it's interesting how like William doesn't really give him that comfort either, because I think a lot of people nowadays would probably try to comfort their children, being like, oh, God is good, he knows that Samuel is, a baby, he couldn't have done any wrong. But they're so steadfast in the original sin and that the baby's a sinner and sinners go to hell, that it's like he can't logic his way out of his teachings that he's already taught his son.
I think that William is comforting in the sense that he's like, I can't remember his exact quote, but he's like, I love you so mightily, or something like that. Like father to son. He's like, I love you so much that I wish I could tell you I knew exactly where Samuel was and what's going on and what heaven looks like and that he's there, but I can't lie to you.
He seems
And
to calm him down.
I think I admire that in a way of being so open and honest. And at that point, it wasn't condescending. It wasn't, well, he brought it upon himself, or like the dismissive way that like even the mom can be at some point. And it's a very real moment because a lot of this movie is the family bickering. A lot of it's focused on Thomasin and her constant failure to meet her parents' expectations, even though she's literally
specifically,
just a girl.
I'm just a baby.
I mean, and that's really the thing. And we see Thomason the entire time, for the most part, trying to be good, earn favor. I mean, it's not going so well for her when she was watching the baby and it got taken. And I understand that, but she also didn't do it.
Yeah. And it's hard because, and it's almost, I feel like she was being targeted by the devil itself, because when we first see the like opening of their cottage and everything, she's praying, talking about she's been sinful because she hasn't been doing her prayers. She's been thinking about other things. She's broken every sin there is in her mind, all these things. And so I think that shows us that like she's opening herself up to temptation, I guess. I don't know how to, but it feels like everything that was happening in this movie was to get her to like come to the other side, basically, to show Thomason, this is how your family really is. You know, turn her parents against her, try to get her out of the house, sell her off to another family. Then turn her twin siblings against her by making them say she's a witch because she joked about it. You know, they turned on her, basically. And then killing the only person who truly loved her and would have, like, had her back, basically, was Caleb. So killing the only person who supported her and then turning the rest of her family against her, killing the father, and just isolating her, showing her mother's true colors, and then she has nothing else. Like, she's in the woods, banished from this town. She has no family. She can't read. She can't write. Like, what is she supposed to do?
I saw a little article after I watched the movie, just kind of getting what other people are thinking. And I saw something that was very similar to that, where her prayer is answered for, like, retribution and what to do, but it's just answered by the devil. And I would like to say that that's not how prayer works, so I'm just going to put that out there. But it worked for what needed to happen in the movie. But yeah, I think that that's true. I think that the family was just in such a dire circumstance that everything got exaggerated. Like, if they had the comfort, so to speak, of their town, or even what their lifestyle was back in England, they wouldn't have been as susceptible to whatever happens to them. So it's, for me, it's awful to watch Thomason struggling day to day when she's trying so hard to be good and just being beaten down repeatedly by the people who are supposed to love her.
Mm-hmm.
That she doesn't. I mean, I think you always have a choice not to sign the devil's book, but I get the character point of it. Thank you if you've stuck around at this point. We are figuring this out and we're having a good time doing it. I'm having a good time. Are you having a good time?
I am.
Your shoulder shimmering, so I feel like that's a good sign.
It's a mixture between I'm feeling loose, but I'm also tired.
I know.
So I don't know.
Katrina has been putting in a lot of work, and she is a super trooper for jumping on to record a podcast right now. So snaps for Katrina, the real hero here. All I do is talk. That's it. I really just talk. So
we love that about you, though.
Oh my God, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
You know how many times you said that exact sentence? Am I the nicest person in your life?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, good for me.
You know what? I actually.
Also, I just wanted to mention, I saw somebody's book cover, and I've been trying. You turned so red just now. And I was like, looking at it, I was like, why is that sword? What is that? Why is there a wave there? Because I know that you guys said that there were things in there, and I like being a detective. So, but the problem is I'm not a Swiftie. So it's like,
The only Swiftie thing on the next book cover is the title of the book, Run From Me, Wildest Dreams, coming March 2024. So, anyway, let's talk about these crazy cats. We're not going to discuss the dad.
Meow.
Oh, Jesus. No, that was a prayer. Oh, Jesus. We're not going to just talk about the dad anymore unless it relates to another character because we have beat that dead goat. So, Katrina, you made a really good point about why you diagnosed the mom, Catherine, with envy, and I would love you to take over.
That stemmed from a Reddit post, and I agreed with them. So we're going to start with that. But I honestly was thinking wrath for the mom because she's so mean to Thomasin. But then I'm like, but rooted in that, I think she's just jealous of Thomasin, like her youth, her beauty, but also she's envious of her old life of not having to struggle, having a community as like a support system. And Catherine is very attached to her silver cup from England, and I'm guessing it's her father's cup. But basically, the father, William, took the cup, traded it for a trap so that he could try to catch the wolf or rabbits and get meat and pelts, but lied by omission by not telling his wife that he took it and traded it and allowed her to blame Thomasin for misplacing or stealing or something of that sort. And did not come to her to Thomason's aid at all. After the cup, it was just kind of like a downhill for the relationship between Catherine and Thomason. You know, she lost her baby, she lost her cup, and then now they want to kick Thomason out of the house. She's getting too old, she's using up resources, bloody bloody blah. That's when Caleb and Thomasin go to the woods to try to get meat for the family so that they don't have to kick her out. But during that, they lose Caleb to the witch, which we will talk about with his lustful pride, lustful sin. And basically, Kate is blaming Thomasin for losing Caleb, losing the baby, because she's always there when the bad things happen. She was there when the baby got stolen. She was there when Caleb got stolen. She was there when Caleb showed up dancing naked in the rain. And therefore, Catherine told Thomasin, like, I saw the way you were looking at him with lust. Like, she was trying to blame Thomasin for Caleb's lust towards Thomasin. Because throughout this movie, we see that lust, it kind of lingers. The camera lingers a little too long on certain things.
Yeah, and then by the end of it, after Kate has, lost everything and she just goes nuts, she completely blames Thomasin for everything that's happened, which ends in a physical fight, and Thomasin has to kill her mom out of self-defense, and she's like, I love you, while her mom is actively trying to kill her, and she found a knife on the ground and has to kill her mom while she's like saying like, I love you, I love you, I love you, because there's this thing Thomasin said in the beginning when she was just fucking around with Mercy that she was the witch, and she was just doing like older sibling shit, like trying to scare her little sister. But because there is a real witch going on, it's not a hard jump why the family believes it, even when Thomasin is trying to say she's not. But at that point, Kate completely believes that everything is Thomason's fault, so Thomason doesn't really have a choice. It's her or her mom.
Which, if Thomasin was a witch, she would also say, I'm not a witch. So it's kind of one of those, it's a catch 22. So it's tough. I feel like Caleb's sin, second to the father's, is like one of the most obvious. They make it pretty known. It starts out like he's a really good kid overall, I think. You know, his baby brother had been missing for a few days, and he gets up early to help his dad with some chores. But in the meantime, he sees his sister Thomasin sleeping and hesitates and stares at her chest a little too long. But he notices that she's having a bad dream. He wakes her up, tells her, hey, go back to sleep. and then goes to like help his father with chores and things. And so like overall, he's a good kid. He and his father go out into the woods to try and see if anything had been caught in the trap. And when they're on their way, like his dad is quizzing him. He's getting everything right. Like he knows all the correct like answers to all his father's like religious questions and scriptures. Yeah. He learns that his father took his mother's cup without his mother knowing. And so when they get back to the house, Kate is very upset and says, "You guys shouldn't have left." And so then Caleb lies, saying, "Oh, we were looking for apples because you love apples and I wanted it to be a surprise." And William allows it. That's also on him as well to complain about that.
Yeah, it's, yeah, like what you mentioned of Caleb being a really good kid, he's kind of the glue that's holding the family together when I guess I sit here and really think about it, because he does still have favor with his parents. We don't see him really ever trying to control the twins and doing much, but he is very much trying to be the man of the house, or learn how to be. Because Kate says something to William, like, if something had happened to both of them while they were gone, then Jonas would be the man of the house, and oh, that would be terrible. But
yeah, don't do that.
Caleb is so sweet and so earnest, and we do see his downfall being less, but like even as he dies declaring love for God and his religion.
Yeah. And I think that's why Caleb's death, it was like honestly the saddest, because we didn't know this baby by any means. And Caleb was the next person to die. You know, he was trying to help his sister. Like, there was another instance where he was feeling lustful at the river with his sister, but he didn't really act on it. He never really acted on it until he and Thomason overheard that the parents were planning to send Thomason away, and he didn't want to do that. So the next morning, very, very early, they take the horse, they go to try and check the trap for meat. And in the process, the rabbit appears again, which earlier in the movie, the father tried to shoot and he got injured, and because it's an old gun. Like
backfired.
It's, yeah. So like the gunpowder backfired, got him in the eye. And so this same rabbit, he sees it, chases after it, and the dog as well. Chases after
no,
the dog.
No, nothing happens to the dog. There's no dog in this movie.
Sure.
Carry on.
And then in the meantime, Thomason's knocked out, but he's lured to this cottage, basically chasing this rabbit. He sees a very beautiful woman with her chest looking good.
Propped up.
And yeah. And so he, like, you can tell he's hesitant, but he overall gives in, kisses the woman. And when, like, the woman grabs him, like, her arm turns, like, old, basically.
Yeah, so
we know
this
that's
is the
witch. And then he turns back up same day at night, naked, dancing in the rain, sort of, is very sick, and is basically bewitched, as they say. And so the whole time he's, you know, chop off her head with an axe. He's trying to, like, say she's a witch, she's a raven, she's a wolf, it doesn't make sense to the family, but like we understand that he's talking about the witch. Like, she takes different forms. She is not just like a woman, so to speak.
Yeah.
But
so
then,
at the scene where Caleb, I mean, he's gonna die, Thomason has already told Mercy that she's a witch and that she signed the devil's book and she was just messing with her. But Mercy has told Jonas, and Jonas and Mercy tell the parents at that point when Caleb is getting really ill that it's all Thomason's fault. She's the witch. Kate believes it right away. She's like, "Oh my God, like, you're the devil." But William has somewhat of a sense of logic. And one of the ways they're trying to prove it is William makes Thomason say the Lord's Prayer, because it was believed that the devil, a demon, anything, couldn't read from the Bible. And she does, because she's not evil. And then they're all trying to say the Lord's Prayer over Caleb to heal him. And Mercy and Jonas start doing it, but then they can't do it anymore.
And they go like catatonic.
Yeah, at first they're like freaking out, and Thomason is saying like they're messing around. But we've already seen that the twins are fucking around with Black Phillip. And we don't know yet that that's a thing. We just think that these kids are being little shits and trying to put blame on Thomason. But this is kind of the question. Because the twins have a relationship with Black Phillip, and we know that Black Phillip is the devil, were they just fucking around, or could they actually not complete the prayer? What's your opinion?
And I think they couldn't do it, because they, as ornery as these children are, after this whole situation, after Caleb dies, they're like laying on this one, laying on a bed or something, completely still, not making a peep. And those kids would definitely make a peep if they could. And like the little boy didn't wake up until the father picked him up and was like, I'm gonna kill you, like Abraham would have done to his son. And that's when the kid was like, oh shit. I think that's when they was like released. Maybe.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that, like how you mentioned before, like if Thomason said that she wasn't a witch, but she was a witch, she'd still say she wasn't a witch.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie really messes with you that you're not sure. I probably believe the same thing, that they actually couldn't, because they had started the Lord's Prayer and then started having their little freak out. So it's just a complete moment of chaos. I mean, I'd almost say, you know, before you get to the very end, true climax scene, this is probably like the biggest action in the movie.
Here's the thing. I don't think that these kids are smart enough or pay attention enough to their scriptures to be like, I'm going to, you know, fuck over Thomason and say that I can't do my prayer. Like, I think in the moment, like, they're not that cunning, because they're like, Thomason's a witch. If Mercy is going to believe that Thomason's a witch, she's not going to also be like, how do I convince them more by faking it? Because I think Mercy did believe it. So I don't think Mercy would fake it if she truly believed that Thomason was a witch.
That's a good point. Because they are young. I mean, they're definitely little shits and little like, nah, kind of kids. But in the moment with all that going on, I think that you're probably right. So Thomason, Kate, and William are praying over Caleb. He starts saying the Lord's Prayer after he's, you know, talked about what we know is the witch in her different forms. And he chokes on the piece of an apple, just like the original sin of Adam and Eve in the garden. But there's also the correlation where he had lied to Kate and said that they went to go find apples.
Mm-hmm.
So even though an apple has not been completely proven that that was the fruit from the Garden of Eden, it's widely referred to being an apple. So just a little disclaimer there. So
yeah, so it could have multiple meanings there, but yeah, definitely gross. But then he sits up and he's just like elated. He's laughing. He's like joyful. And then he's like talking about, I can see, like, I don't even remember. It's very hard to understand everything that this kid says, but I'm assuming that he's like seeing the face of God. Maybe he's seeing heaven, and then he dies.
See,
I don't
and
know.
Here's
I
the
don't
thing.
Know what he's seeing.
Here's the thing that I believe. When you're a Christian, and I'm only speaking about Christian, I'm not speaking about Catholicism or Buddhism or Baptist, Lutheran, and I'm not speaking about anything else other than like my upbringing as a Pentecostal Assemblies of God Christian. When you are a Christian and we see that even though Caleb has sinned, we all sin, he seems very repentant and is trying. William is right. No man can know what happens to somebody's soul after they die. But Caleb is a child and we do see him trying to live a Christ-like life.
Uh-huh.
Even if the devil was in front of me, physically grabbed my hand, and for the purpose of this movie, like made me sign my name, if I didn't do that, if I wasn't doing it with intent, it's not blasphemous. It's not me.
Right.
So
he was bewitched to do the things that he like.
Well, and all
yes,
he did
he
was.
lied, but he didn't lie in like a way that deems hell worthy. You know what I mean?
And I think that this movie leads you to believe with all of the scenes where each person individually is having their own like prayer time and asking for forgiveness, that it's likely William and Caleb probably would have asked for forgiveness for that. I place less blame on Caleb. So,
right.
But my point that I'm trying to make is that I would believe that even though Caleb was affected by the witch, I think that he could have died from her influence, but I don't think he went to hell.
Right. I don't think he was damned.
And I think the movie wants you to have that ambiguity, but that is what my take of it would be. And not because he was saying the Lord's Prayer or proclaiming that he was seeing heaven. I like in the sense of where like, oh, well, like if you're possessed, like you can't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he was. I would say that Caleb, while he was not perfect, was the most honest and the soul that had the most good
mm-hmm.
in him, which I think is why it's so sad when what happens to him happens to him. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, and I think it's really the catalyst for everything else that happens after his death to happen so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, like, this movie built up to Caleb's death, and then once Caleb died, it just went to hell in a handbasket, as they say.
That's my personal opinion. So then
yeah,
Caleb comes, he dies, and then it's right after that that William sends the three kids outside, right?
Yeah. Basically, like, they go down, like, Thomason tries to touch Caleb, and this is where the mom lashes out and was like, don't touch him. Like, because she truly believes that Thomason is a witch. So Thomason's upset. She goes outside. The father tries to comfort her, but then asks her, you know, are you really a witch? Because we're going to have to, like, tell somebody about what's happening here. And she's upset that he doesn't believe her. He's like, well, what am I supposed to believe? The children are this. And then she says, well, they're the ones talking with Black Phillip.
You're right.
And so he goes in, and this is when he's like, I'm going to kill you. And that's when the children wake up, and then he throws them all into the goat pen with Black Phillip.
Not a good
move,
William.
Why have you slaughtered this goat, first of all?
Well, because they need meat. So we can speak about Jonas and Mercy really quickly. I mean,
yeah,
they're often shown together. I think the only time we get one of them alone is when Mercy comes to the little brook with Thomason and Caleb. And that's when Thomason fucks with Mercy and says that she's the witch.
Yeah, because Mercy comes up and is like joking around that I'm the witch of the wood, blah, 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 clickety clackety. And I don't know what clickety clackety means, but sure. Like,
it's whatever's
so
going on.
She's like, I see her flying through the woods, all this other stuff. And nobody really believes her. They think that she's just like having fun, making jest. And so Thomason says, I'm the witch of the woods, to scare her, because that's what siblings do. They fuck with each other. And she runs off. But after that, Mercy still doesn't listen. Like, Mercy and Jonas still don't listen to her, basically. But throughout this whole movie, they're singing about Black Phillip. They're messing with him. They're chasing him around, doing all this other stuff. And they say, you know, Black Phillip whispers to me or speaks to me. And when they're put into the goat pen, basically, that's when everybody starts to realize, oh, this shit's real. But
yeah,
I listed Mercy as a wrath because she's kind of like vengeful towards Thomason for being like, I'm the witch. And then Jonas never does anything. So I just put sloth for Jonas because
he
doesn't want to do anything.
That's perfect. Because one of the things that Kate gets onto Thomason about is that Thomason doesn't make the children mind and do all their chores and stuff. And Thomason's like, well, they literally won't. Mercy is screaming all the time and shrieking. So I think wrath works for her. And then once Thomasin, Mercy, and Jonas are trapped in the barn. Like, William goes and gets lumber and nails them in. Like, they're stuck there. That's the first time we really ever see them speaking with each other versus just bickering. So, for Thomasin's journey, Katrina put greed as her sin slash gluttony. After we're talking about this, I think we could probably put gluttony on Samuel because there are seven of them. I mean, and he's a baby, so he would need everything. I feel like it's a throwaway sin, but also the baby got thrown away too. So bye.
Yeah.
But
I think her main one is great though.
I think that this is so right. And honestly, I kind of want to watch it again just through that lens. I was so focused on,
Being scared.
well, that saving my soul, but the how the movie treats women and what women's roles are and the religious aspect. But I mean, of course, seven deadly sins are religious, but this is great. This is very good. This is probably the best part of the podcast. And if you think so, it's all thanks to Katrina. So
And Reddit. Thanks, Reddit.
I did some IMDb trivia hunting, but that was not very much of a contribution. This is
No,
great.
it did.
So Thomason's journey is through greed. I've already said I completely agree with that. I think it shows right away when she is so visibly reluctant to being banished. Like when they say that she whips her head around to her dad so fast and she's like, what the fuck? She's the one who brings
Yeah.
up that they had stained glass windows back in England and had these nice things. When she's talking about her sin, she's talking about all of the desires and thoughts that have been sinful in her head. So most likely coveting things. But what we get at the very end is how does the devil make her sign his book is by offering her things. He said,
Right.
ooh, oh, I hear it in my head when he's like, wouldst thou like to live deliciously? But he's like whispering, and it's so scary. And then he's
Yeah.
offering her, would you like the taste of butter? Would you like a pretty dress?
See the
And
world.
oh yeah. So
Yeah.
all of these tangible things that especially I think the ground was cursed, or like something happened, like something got the devil and his witchy friend to oppress this family. Something happened. So if
Right.
somebody's gonna take his time and attention, you know, he had to work his little schemes of things. So he would know, like the devil knows you. The devil can get you where it hurts because he knows what you want. So, I mean, he got Thomason. She, you know, fell victim. And I say victim because I don't agree with this. There's a lot of things in movies like Gone Girl, Pearl, things like that, where I'm like, good for her. Like, yay. This
Yeah.
one, I'm like, oh no. But greed was so perfect, and you were so spot on for that.
It's hard not to like feel sorry for her throughout this whole movie because like she's really like the protagonist, I think.
Yeah.
Of this, like it's centered around what's happening around her and to her in a way that's like you see the way her mother is treating her, alienating her, trying to push her out the door, you know. But her father still loves her, Caleb still loves her. The children are nightmares.
We don't really
And
want them to love us.
like, who wouldn't want to like leave that life? And so it really. She was set up for failure in that sense. Like, Caleb doesn't remember England, so he can't want that because he really doesn't know much else.
Well, and I think that this kind of relates to like what we were talking about at the very beginning, where I was saying stuff about you are your own complete person. How can you just be like an NPC? Basically, how can you just follow rules and be in line and do whatever? So we see that through Thomason. And yes, she has had different experiences, but she is also the other in the family for admitting that she's having these sinful thoughts and thinking about these things. She doesn't want to. She wants to be the kind of person who can be happy leading this life, but that isn't her destiny. So for the sake of the movie, it takes a little bit of a wrong turn. Don't approve of that. But you can understand it in the format that's being given to you.
Yeah. And I think at the end, you know, she makes a deal with the devil. She signs the book with his assistance because she doesn't know how to read or write. She can't write her name. And then she walks naked into the woods and comes across a circle of other naked women who are chanting around a fire, like writhing around, and then eventually levitating in the air. And Thomasin starts levitating with them and just has this like joy, like on her face, like smile. Cause I feel like to her, like if you remove the devil part, like if you just take that part out of this, in this instance, like this is her true freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she feels included. She didn't feel like she was wanted at home. She wasn't included. Like she didn't feel like she belonged there. Like this is a place that welcomed her, like supported her and was like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like overjoyed and also floating hella high in the air, which I'm afraid of heights. No, thank you. Don't float me nowhere. And it kind of just ends with Thomasin smiling at the top of a tree.
Yeah, I saw something that was like the first time we see Thomasin, because she's the first frame of the movie. You know, she's in her pilgrim clothes. She's got her little bonnet, the 85 layers of clothing you have to wear. And at the very end, she's naked. So where her journey has started of this heavy, oppressed life to ending in something so freeing. We're taking the devil out of that part because that's
right.
A different story. That's like The Witch too. Where she realizes it was all a mistake. Don't do that. But
oh, there's a witch too?
No, that's me, you know,
oh,
giving Thomasin an out later.
Yeah, gotcha.
No. I think once you've gone that far and she was old enough to understand, like she's out, she's gone. And it's very sad. But that's my take on it based on, you know, what I came into the movie with. So I think that The Seven Deadly Sins is a really perfect lens to look at this movie through if you're gonna break beat by beat down, so to speak.
Yeah.
So great job. It's also really sad because at each point, minus the three youngest kids, everyone gets kind of their own opportunity to say that they want to live this lifestyle. They want these good, quote unquote, things. And then they fall, like, because of their own issue.
Yeah. And speaking of the youngest children, the twins, we never see what happens to them.
Right. Oh, let's talk about this whole barn scene. I know we're kind of skipping around. We're kind of doing whatever, but this is like something about the movie we can talk about.
Yeah.
So William has boarded the kids up in the barn. Like I mentioned, they have their first real conversation. Thomasin is looking at the twins who are sitting near Black Phillip, and Black Phillip's just chilling. There's other like animals in there, but she's like, does he really speak to you? And they're like, yeah. And then she's trying to speak to him, and then nothing happens. So at that point, we're being gaslit about what the fuck is going on. Like, are these kids just monsters?
Truly.
And then we cut to what's the next morning. Is there a noise? I can't remember. Is there like a scream?
Well, there
nothing
okay.
happened. Why does William go outside? Does he just go outside? I don't know.
I think he goes outside, but what happened the night prior was the twins heard something, and when they look over, the witch is like milking the goat.
Not Black Phillip, another goat.
Right, a female goat. And
oh duh.
Don't black no.
Nope, nope, we're
not going,
nope.
not going in there. And like she turns around and they scream, and we never see them again. So it's assumed, like Hansel and Gretel, the witch potentially took them, the same witch that took the baby. And then in the morning, when William wakes up, comes outside, he sees that the barn is busted open, the animals are dead, and Thomasin is just sitting there unscathed. And this is when he has his confrontation with Black Phillip, and Black Phillip gores him.
Yeah, so he comes out and he sees everything, and like you said, all the animals are dead. Like their necks have been like ripped out. Like it's again tasteful because I cannot handle any kind of animal death in a movie, but it's not super visual. Like it's kind of a faraway thing, so you know what happened, but you don't have to see it happen, and I appreciate that. William just gets another couple steps in, and we're on his face, and he and Thomason are staring at each other, and then all of a sudden it's just like boom. Black Phillip yoinks him.
Yeah, and so he grabs his axe like he's gonna do something, and then he just doesn't do anything. He gets Black Phillip, headbutts him into like his wood pile that he's been. Every time this man is stressed, he's chopping wood. It's raining, it's dark, doesn't matter. He's chopping wood. Like
That's
that's
like the only
his
thing he can do.
outlet,
He can't run
which
his
is what,
family. He can't
yeah.
grow crops. He can't take care of his children. He can't do anything. The only thing that this man can do is chop wood. And he doesn't look
Yeah.
bad doing it. I'm just saying.
And that's exactly what Thomason told him that pissed him off, and he threw her in the barn.
True, true.
So yeah, in we presume he's dead because all the wood fell on him.
Yeah,
And this
he's gone.
is yeah, and this is where the mother comes out now and confronts Thomason, and they fight where then Thomason has to kill her mother, and then after that she goes back into the. She falls asleep.
Yeah, she goes back
Thomason
into the
takes
house and like rests her head on the table. She's like, done. And it's really
Yeah, I'm.
sad.
Yeah.
You know, your entire family is dead. I mean, we assume she must know what happened to the kids specifically, but your entire family's dead. You just had to kill your mother and you have nothing. So she just went inside. She took off like her little shift or like the outfit on top of the shift. She's just
Yeah.
in like a nightgown thing.
Puts a blanket on.
Yeah, I mean, what
Like,
else are you
what
gonna
else are
do?
you exactly? Like, what else are you supposed to do in that situation other than let's take a nap and clear my head?
Yeah. And then she is like drawn to go outside, and then Black Phillip is just standing there.
The
And then
goat
she follows him in
version.
the barn. Yeah. Oh, let's talk about that. Ooh.
Yeah.
So Thomason follows Black Phillip into the barn, and then she's like, "Are you gonna say anything to me? Like, you're a goat. What's going on?" And then she thinks that she has just flipped her lid. She thinks she has gone completely crazy. She's about to leave. And then this motherfucking goat starts talking. You never see the goat, you just hear the voice. And it's very scary. Then he starts this whole thing about, you know,
What do you
luring
want?
her. What do you want? And she's like, "Well, what can you give?" And he's like, "Butter, dresses, travel." I'm like, I'm listening, but also no. And then the whole time the camera has been on Thomason, and then she says that she can't write, so the devil says he'll help her. And then we flip to, we see the open book on the ground, and then we see the goat take a couple steps with his hooves, and then it turns into feet, a man's boots. It's so scary. Why would they do that? That I hated it. Oh, and then you go back to Thomason, and then you see like something shifting behind her, and then you see a black glove on her shoulder, and then on the other side of her, then you see like the face come out, and he's like whispering all these things in her ear about how he'll help her like sign her name and all this stuff. I'm going to have nightmares tonight. I hate that. It's very well done. I hate it.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Captain Hook. Does that make him less scary for you?
I don't know, because there's a lot of daddy issue things that go along with Captain Hook as a character, and I don't know that we can do
I don't
that.
find Captain Hook scary. So he looked like Captain Hook, in my opinion. Honestly, you just put a feather in that man's hat, you got Captain Hook.
I mean, pretty evil destroys children.
Yeah.
Anyway,
So.
Thomason, I say loses, and she gets naked, she signs the book, she goes out to the woods. I saw something where, like you mentioned, what happens to the kids? I saw something where the witch probably took the kids and they killed them the same way that Samuel was killed, and they're able to use like the bodies to make the rest of the coven young again, and then that's how they fly.
Oh, that makes sense.
It's not confirmed by anything, but it makes sense, and I'll go with it.
Yeah, I don't think they'd keep those breaths, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think it's another interesting thing that like there was like the devil, but then there's also like the witch involvement. I think it's also interesting that the movie is called The Witch when you also have the devil being involved. It kind of feels misleading in a way. You don't get any origin. Like, how did Black Phillip get there?
Come about to the farm. Well, and it's also like all witches worship the devil is kind of what it's giving. Like we should just in that day and time, most people would assume if you're a witch, you worship the devil. Whereas in progressed times, that's really not the case. It's more like nature and things less or just not sinister, like
Well, for
devil
that,
worship.
I think it's also, if you don't worship and follow Christ, then by definition, you're following Satan.
Yeah,
So I think that that's.
which back in that day is pretty much what they assumed. Like if you're not a Christian,
That's
you're
it.
going to hell. Like there's no anything about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've probably beaten this movie and all of its topics to the ground. Do you have
You're
anything
welcome.
else specifically that you want to add?
No, I think we covered it.
I think it's good. I really love The Witch. I think that there's so much that we can talk about. Sorry if you wanted a beat by beat and we didn't
Watch
do that.
the
Yeah. Watch the
movie.
movie. Get your beats yourself. Beat yourself
Yeah,
off.
I was gonna say that.
We do in other news have an exciting update. Next month, we're going to have, in my opinion, a very special guest.
And who is that guest?
It's Marissa, my bestie, my co-author also. So we snuck her in on the same month that my second book is releasing. It's not a
Also,
shameless
our
plug if this is
only.
my podcast and my book too. I don't think so.
No, and if Marissa's going to be on here, also, she's our only Patreon at the moment. So
She's the only one who
if you want to
cares.
get on a guest star, maybe give us money.
Hey, you can buy our
Oh,
love for sure. So
absolutely. At least
I
our attention.
says me going on every date that I've ever been on. So we are going to discuss. See, we came prepared. We knew what movie we were going to do next month before we finished getting anything done for this one. So we are going
Regardless.
to discuss, and Marissa got to pick this. We're going to do Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal, the Ridley Scott Hannibal from 2001. We're going to breeze through Silence of the Lambs a little bit. It's probably, been done to death because it's phenomenal and we will talk about it. But we're also going to talk about Hannibal, and the lens that we are going to approach this is coming at those movies in the purview of being a dark romance girly. Because if you get high and you read a lot of smut and you watch Silence of the Lambs and then you watch Hannibal, shit's hot. Okay? Okay? I don't care. I don't care. And it's going to be fun. And this is our take on it. You can get a scholarly review of it in a book, but this is my podcast and this is how I'm going to do it. Okay?
And I am here. So we'll see what I think.
She's
I'm going to watch the
okay.
movie with that in mind and we'll see what my opinion is.
You haven't seen either of them.
I've seen Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, well
And I think
watch it
I've
through the
seen
brain
Hannibal.
that you have read Haunting Adeline. Okay? Just think about that.
Oh, God. Okay. I'll do
So
that.
Katrina wants to get on me for being like, do this. Katrina is reading every book recommendation I give her, so who's really at fault? Okay, I'll take that. Very
Well, thank
exciting.
you
Oh yeah, thanks,
for
I guess.
listening. We will see you on the next one. And let us know if you liked this format. If you didn't, you can also tell us that. Just be nice. And we will see you in March.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you guys for listening. We hope that you enjoyed our episode and we look forward to hearing from you.
Find us on Twitter or Instagram to request a movie or even just to discuss your thoughts at Booze and Boobs. Or send us an email, boozeandboobs@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we're working on turning this into a thing. So if you can please follow us on Patreon, our account there is Booze and Boobs also.
And what are some of the benefits to joining our Patreon?
Oh, Katrina, I am so glad that you asked. As a patron, you will get early release episodes, bloopers, mini episodes where we showcase scenes from the movies that we're talking about, or just conversations that we're having that we had to cut from our recording.
All that and more. And they're fun tiers. You can be an A cup, a C cup, or you can join the Triple D Plus group like us.
We truly appreciate your support, and we look forward to growing our following to create more content for listeners like you.
So we'll see you next time, or else.
Yeah, let's end it with a threat.